back, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of the Crossing Routes Podcast, fueled by FTN Fantasy. My name is Herms, joined as always by my good friend and co-host, Tyler Orzynski, a.k.a. Tyler O. And today, we are going to continue our conversation on second-year players ahead of the 2026 fantasy season and how dynasty managers should be treating some key players from last year's rookie class. We've already talked about a lot of the quarterbacks. We ran through the key running backs and receivers, but we have not gotten into what probably has, Tyler, and I'm curious if you agree with me on this, probably like the most polarizing rookies from last year, the 2025 class, are all in the tight end position. What are people going to be doing with this bunch?
Man, I don't think we've seen a tight end class shoot up the draft boards in their second year like we have the 2025, right? There was a lot of hype surrounding, obviously, Colston Loveland and Tyler Warren going into the 2025 season. And as the season ended, it's fair to say both these guys certainly live up to the hype. And then Harold Fannin, who I think a lot of people, including ourselves, liked as more of like kind of a deep sleeper, absolutely broke out as a rookie, kind of unexpected for him to do that when he did. So now we're kind of looking at three second-year tight ends in the consensus top five. Now, I'll get kind of where I'm at and how I'm looking at this thing shortly. But at the same time, I think it's deserved, regardless of where you land on things, for us to say, hey, there's three second-year tight ends rounding out the top five. I don't think we've seen that before, Herms. It is something that we need to talk about. It is unheard of. I can't think of a certain time or a single time in the history I've been doing this football coverage that we've seen a tight end class like this. So really excited to get in here and kind of break it down and how we're supposed to attack it and how we're supposed to be drafting it going forward.
Oh, for sure, man. It really did. You know, of all of these position groups, if one really deserved a standalone episode, it is certainly the tight ends. And if you want to read more about these, you know, second year player overviews, you can go over to ftnfantasy.com. This discussion is based around an ongoing series of articles that you had published on the website. They are all phenomenal reads. Definitely go check that out. I will have the link for all the listeners in the description, per usual, when we talk about articles that we do, but we have to get into it. We're going to talk about these 2025 tight ends headed into 2026. And I think the conversation kind of has to start with, you know, by year's end, the guy who did the best, and that would be Colston Loveland of the Chicago Bears. Now, I know we talk about the Chicago Bears a lot on this podcast, and it's normally us, you know, kind of dunking on Luther Burden or dunking on Caleb Williams. But when it comes to Chicago, the thing we really can't dunk on is Colston Loveland. Tell us more about it, Tyler.
Yeah, so I think just to kind of walk it back one more time is I had Colston Loveland ahead of Tyler Warren going into the 2025 draft. After the draft, obviously, I kept him there because he was drafted before him. And I stayed strong on that take throughout the season. It looked bad because Tyler Warren came out the gates absolutely scorching hot as a rookie and Colston Loveland not so much. And I do think it's really important to note that traditionally, if there's a position that we're going to, you know, give a little bit of grace, you know, in the first season or even first half of the season, it's the tight end position in terms of how long it takes to break out. We know it's a really tough position. Even, you know, you look back at some of the all-time greats in terms of tight ends that we can think of. You know, Kelsey comes to mind. Just didn't necessarily crush it their rookie year. I was going to say Gronk, but I'm not sure if Gronk crushed or not. But what I'm getting at here is, it takes a while sometimes. It's a really tough position. It's one of the toughest positions to learn in the NFL. So I'm not holding Colston Loveland's kind of slow start against him. In fact, he really wasn't getting the snaps anyways. However, around the week 9-ish time frame is when things really started coming alive for Colston Loveland and they started really using him. So, I mean, in week 9, he had a tight end 2 finish. He had another tight end 2 finish in week 12. He had another tight end finish in week 17, tight end 1 finish in 18. And he scored 32 points in the wild card game. What really strikes me here with Colston Loveland is this Bears offense is balanced, okay? It's a balanced offense, in my opinion. They're not like a pass-happy or just extremely run-heavy. It's fairly balanced offense. And he had multiple games. I mean, from week 17, week 18, the wild card to the division round, finishing out the year, he was in double-digit targets all four of those games. He went 10, 13, 15, and 10 targets to finish the season. And to me, targets are always earned. So what does this tell me? is that he is the focal point. As he broke out and learned the things he needed to learn, he is the focal point of this ascending Bears offense. And yes, we have some skepticism around Caleb and certainly some skepticism around Burden. But as an offense as a whole, it's a very good one. And if we're going to be out on Burden, we certainly need to be in on Colston Loveland. To me, Colston Loveland is easily the focal point of this offense. He's a guy that we need to go out and get. I have him as my tight end three, which probably isn't too hot of a take. I'll be curious as to where a keep trade cut has him. But still, to me, he sits as a guy that I would buy high on, right? If right after Brock Bowers and Trey McBride, this is the guy that I want. If somebody thinks like the slow start has something to do with his talent, and he just came out hot at the end of the season, take advantage of it. He checked a lot of boxes in college. It all translated to pros. This is going to be a name that we're talking about in the likes of Brock Bowers and Trey McBride when the season comes to an end. Herms.
No, it wouldn't shock me at all. And listeners, you know, just as a fun little bonus teaser, if we have some time at the end, we might talk about our updated opinions on the Brock Bowers versus Trey McBride debate. But yeah, when it comes to Colston Loveland, dude, he is the guy. And I think that that is the important thing to really continue to hammer at, because people love having these conversations about what to do with these receivers. People spend a lot of time discussing, well, do you want Roma Dunze? Do you want Luther Burden? It's like, dude, you watch the team at the end of the year. They are locking on to Colston Loveland. He is the guy that, what's that phrase? The straw that stirs the drink. You know, mm-hmm. It's him, dude. It really is. Buying high is such a risky thing to do in Dynasty, but when it comes to these type of onesie positions, or I get, you know, I was going to say quarterback, but if you're playing super flex, but either way, you still have to do it at quarterback too. These cornerstone type positions where if you have that level of a difference maker, you just go for it anyway. And Colston Loveland, I think, is that guy to do it. And keep trade cut, looking at that, he is the tight end three behind Bowers and McBride. But the interesting thing to me that I am curious to get your perspective on before we talk about some of these other names that are also very high up on this list is that the closest asset pick-wise that is near Colston Loveland's name is the thing worth its weight in gold, the early 2027 first. So I guess I would be curious, because I think my answer is yes. I'm just going to say that right now. Would you be willing to move one of those worth their weight in gold, presumably, quote, early 2027 firsts for getting Colston Loveland? Now, if you think it's going to be the 101, you don't have to do that. Jeremiah Smith will have conversations about this months from now. But like, generally speaking, would you do that for Loveland?
If it's early, if I'm holding my own pick and I know I'm going to be tanking and trying to lose, I'm probably not going to move it, obviously. But if I have multiple firsts, like, yeah, I mean, generally speaking, yeah, I'd move an early first for Colston Loveland, particularly in those tight end premium leagues, without question. He is that kind of talent. I believe in the guy. I've seen everything I need to see. The college, again, the tape, the statistics, the breakout at all the boxes were checked, man. He's the real deal, and I'd be willing to pay the price to get him on the squad.
And I'm curious if you feel similarly about the next guy on our list, the guy that you said you had him ranked ahead of, Tyler Warren of the Indianapolis Colts, because his name is also the closest to an early 2027 first. So let's hear from you if Warren's value is in the same ballpark as Loveland's.
Yeah, so when it comes to Tyler Warren, for me, I have more of a hold, right? Talent is undeniable. But I think still trying to figure out what this Colts offense is and maybe a long-term solution at quarterback. I know we can say it's Daniel Jones, and that's fine by me. I think he's good, not great. I don't necessarily love it. I mean, just look at like what the Bears are looking like on offense and with Caleb Williams. That's what we're trying to shoot for. That's what we want to look. When we're moving picks like that we want something stable, not just the player. Like, we talk about this all the time. Well, you buy the talent, not the situation. And I think that's completely fair, but you do sometimes need to think about the situation when you're talking about these early firsts. So from my perspective, I think there's a little bit more uncertainty around what this offense is and how Daniel Jones continues to operate, that I'm not necessarily going to be moving an early 2027 first for Tyler Warren. Tyler Warren remains a hold. I like him on my team. You know, having him one spot below Loveland in my 2025 rookie ranks and my dynasty ranks and my redraft ranks is certainly not a slight. He's an incredible tight end, right? And I think he deserves to be in the top four, undeniably, right? So I just think Loveland is a little bit more of a natural wide receiver. I think we kind of saw that if you watch the tape. And it's really tough. Like, I don't want to take anything away from Tyler Warren, but everything having Loveland ahead of him is just that's how good Loveland is. So he's a hold for me. I would not move the same pick, even though they're only one spot apart, but certainly not selling Tyler Warren because he is a piece that you can build around.
No, and the Colts quite obviously feel the same way, and I think it's a big part of why they felt so comfortable moving on from Michael Pittman Jr. this offseason, and the fact that they didn't really do a lot in the way of replacing him. We had a separate conversation about this on another episode of this podcast. I'm not going to go super deep into it, but I will say, just on the subject of Tyler Warren specifically, if anybody is going to sort of mop up whatever quote-unquote vacated targets, we know they're not real, but just for the sake of, you know, the short area work that would occasionally get funneled to Michael Pittman Jr., I think most reliably would go into the hands of Tyler Warren. So there is some interesting room for growth, but maybe not a ton of growth to the point that he would be touching Loveland. I am with you. I would prefer Colson Loveland between the two of them, but I can understand how people might feel the opposite way. It's a viable debate, but I think our next name, though, I don't know, probably shouldn't be held quite in the same conversation, but that's just because more environmental factors with his team, and he is the next guy in many people's rankings, though, and that's Harold Fannin Jr. with the Browns. Obviously, the Browns have been in the news a lot lately, so a pretty easy place to pick up the baton from. How should people be looking at Fannin entering 2026?
I mean, don't get it twisted here. Like, I like Harold Fannin. I think he's great. He obviously paid off, as he probably didn't draft him in the first round. I mean, no, he didn't draft him in the first round in a rookie drafts. Anyone who has Fannin on their teams right now that didn't just draft got a steal. And I think I can say that without a doubt, right? I see him going like the third round of some rookie drafts. You know, he was a great pass-catching wide receiver at Bowling Green. I think, you know, we love them action. You know, I certainly had some concerns with how that level of play would translate to the NFL, even though he looked like an absolute stud out there. Yeah. Wasn't out on him, obviously. He's certainly a guy that I liked, but I did not expect him to break out the way he did as early as he did. I mean, he's a wide receiver at tight end, and that's how Cleveland used him in 2025. So I think he deserves some of the hype here. I just think there's a lot of other factors at play that don't really have much to do with Fannin that have me a little bit lower. Now, I do have Harold Fannin as a sell. That's not to say that I don't like him. Again, I have him as my tight end 7. He's the tight end 5. But when we're talking about the top 8, top 10, 2 spots is substantial, right? That's a substantial amount of a gap when we're only talking like the top 10 or top 8 players. So here's some of the reasons that I think I need to have a little bit of pause here. One, I think it's just generally foolish to think that these 3 2025 rookie wide receivers are going to finish in the top 5. Let's just say that right now. I think that in itself is just a ridiculous concept. So you got to pick your battles here, and my battle is going to be with Fannin. I felt, you know, the situation was really good. He really feasted as like the only weapon right there. And Dylan Gabriel, who's not an NFL quarterback without an NFL arm, really just peppered Harold Fannin in the intermediate space. So it really kind of, you know, targets are earned, don't get me wrong. That's just a piece of the puzzle here. I think more importantly, the Browns added some pass catching weapons and KC Concepcion, who I think is a dog, and Denzel Boston, who I wasn't as much of a fan of, but still you got to respect the fact that they spent some real capital on him. You know, eating directly into the target share. I'm not subscribing to the idea of like, oh, they'll open up more space for Fannin. That's just not what I'm going to play. Probably a new quarterback under center in some regard this year. New offense. Todd Monken's in town. You know, that's going to be completely different. Just too many moving pieces, too many added pieces for me to be like, yes, top 5 tight end. He's my tight end 5. Again, tight end 7 does not mean that I'm out on Fannin. Like, certainly want to draft the guy, but we're talking tight end 5 prices. That's when I think is a sell. And what's that difference? You know, I would much rather have Tucker Kraft or Sam Laporta at this point over Fannin, right? And I think that's kind of where I draw that line. You know, Sam Laporta has already done it, tight end 1 overall as a rookie. We've seen it happen before. Injuries have kind of played a role. And then you look at his team, like, the Lions are still a really good offense with a good quarterback. Same thing with Tucker Kraft. Tucker Kraft's injury, but absolute dog. He is the alpha pass catcher in that offense. And the Packers offense is good, and Jordan Love is good enough. And I would just rather have Tucker Kraft or Sam Laporta in the short term and the long term over Fannin. So if somebody... if I had Fannin on my roster, I would look to probably try to acquire like Tucker Kraft or Sam Laporta plus, maybe with like a 3rd, maybe try 2nd to see if somebody's hyped about it. But in the end of the day, I would take that straight up. Again, nothing against Fannin, but you got to pick your battles here when you're talking about the top eight players. And this is one of the ones that I think I'm going to be putting my flag in.
I feel similarly, particularly because we are talking about a tight end five price tag that is attached to, again, according to Keep Trade Cut, an equivalent value of a late 2027 first or an early 2028 pick. And like, bro, if you are spending that much to go out and get a player, particularly a cornerstone, or at least in theory, cornerstone piece of the Cleveland Browns, you are buying with the expectation that this extra capital that they've acquired through this Myles Garrett trade is going to like guarantee that they hit on that quarterback. That's the thing that you have to actually, like, that's what you're agreeing to. I think it is interesting to speculatively buy Cleveland Browns players right now on the chance and the opportunity that the quarterback they draft in 2027 ends up being that guy. But do you really want to do it when it's already attached to something fifth among all tight ends? Like, no, like you're not getting any sort of wiggle room in there. So I think that really is, it's just the misalignment. That is the part where it's such a hard sell. So yeah, listeners, if you can go out there and you can swap for some of these slightly older guys, like, I don't know. I don't think it would be that ridiculous to prefer Kraft and Laporta to Tyler Warren, to be perfectly honest. I mean, like, there are just a lot of really good tight ends in the league, and those guys aren't exactly old. A lot of these dudes we're talking about are still very young and in their prime. And you know, that's actually a pretty good transition into our commercial break, because we have so many good young tight ends to talk about. We have to pause so that we can hear from our sponsor and then talk about more of those names. So what do you say we just do that, everybody? We'll take a break, we'll come back, and then we'll get into more discussion on some of these 2025 tight ends and how we feel about them moving forward. Don't go anywhere. This is the Crossing Browns podcast. Hey everyone, C.H. Herms from FTN's Crossing Routes podcast. Watching sports is a very fun thing to do all by itself, but sometimes it can be even better when you have a little bit more on the line than just your regular rooting interest, if you know what I mean. But if you don't live in a state that has a sports book, how are you supposed to get in on all the action? Well, thanks to our friends at Novig, America's number one sports prediction market, people in over 35 states now have unprecedented access to all of the hottest plays around the world of sports. Better yet, if you sign up and make a minimum $5 purchase with code FTN at checkout, not only will you get to join in on all the Novig fun, but we will email you a promo code for a free month of a GOAT subscription for free. That's right, unlock our top flight subscription that gets you all of our premium content, betting models, and expert picks across the world of sports. If you've ever wondered what an FTN GOAT subscription would be like, this is a great way to find out. So all you got to do is go to Novig.us or download the Novig app. Give them all the information they're looking for, make a minimum $5 purchase, but make sure to include that code FTN at checkout to get in on the Novig fun and unlock a free month of our GOAT tier subscription for free for an entire month. Seems like a pretty good time if you ask me. So go ahead and sign up for Novig, America's number one sports prediction market.
Yeah, welcome back. This is still the Crossing Routes podcast. I am Herms. He is Tyler Rowe. And we are still having our conversation about some of these key tight ends heading into year two and how dynasty managers should be approaching them. But you know, because we only have one more very big name to talk about, we are also going to engage in a fun bonus topic about the Brock Bowers versus Trey McBride debate, because things have changed on both of those teams and it's important to talk about. But we have to cover our last big name from the 2025 class before we do that, and that would be Aronde Gadsden second with the Los Angeles Chargers. We just got finished talking about a team that has a lot of new moving parts, new coaches, new systems, a lot of things that people are going to have to acclimate to. That is also something that Gadsden's going to have to deal with in LA this year. How should dynasty managers be viewing a guy that, Tyler, we really only saw, I mean, he went off plenty. He was a good player, but we're talking about what, like 6 or 7 really big games?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was even less than that, if we're being completely honest with you, man. I think he had like a legitimate breakout like moment midseason. I think you're absolutely nailed it. But you know, a tight end 1 finish in week 7, Tight end 4 finished in week 8. And outside of that, I wouldn't say there's anything elite. He just couldn't replicate that dominance over the stretch. And we know there was an injury involved there a bit. I think the resume overall is solid more than it is great, right? That's at a rookie tight end doing that. Like anytime a rookie tight end can get those tight end 1 finishes or tight end 4 finishes, like that does say a lot to me. But I guess like my take here is that the market has maybe overreacted to the David Njoku coming in and like a 1-year, I would say, paltry contract here. I think that people have faded Gadsden a little bit too far in response to this. I feel good about Mike McDaniel's offense. Like whatever they're going to install, it's going to go well. It's going to be high flying. I still think Gadsden profiles as a solid low end tight end 1. I get the slight concerns of him being like your only tight end going into the 2026 season in Dynasty. I think he's more of a buy. I think the market correction has gone a little bit too far in the direction of Njoku coming to town. So, if I have to have a take, it's like, yeah, go out and get Gadsden. I'm not afraid. But, he's definitely more of like the complimentary piece, because after you get past like those top tight ends we talked about, obviously the top 2, those rookies, we add Laporta and then we add in Tucker. We're at tight end 8. And like from there, it's like it's Pitts. And I don't know anyone who feels really good about Kyle Pitts at this point in time. And I think that's when you can start talking about Gadsden being a legitimate name there is kind of rounding out the top last couple spots there in the top 10. So I saw enough. I liked him as a prospect. I probably should have been more bullish in the rookie drafts to be grabbing him, but I definitely did like him. Good to see, them add pieces around the Chargers. I do think the Chargers offense continued good. I have some concerns in like how much volume he will see, but it's still, in my opinion, worth taking the stab just because I believe in what's going to happen there as long as the Chargers can stay healthy, as that's been a big problem for the folks down there in LA.
Yeah, I mean, at end of the year, both starting tackles were gone. Justin Herbert was getting destroyed. I mean, like, what were they supposed to do? But, like, prior to that point, it was humming. And I think one of the interesting things that they have going for them, specifically with new offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel coming in from Miami, is that he was the one who orchestrated an offense that got the most out of Jonnu Smith. Now, it wasn't the first time Jonnu Smith had ever been a viable tight end for fantasy purposes, but that year he had in Miami was pretty legit. And we think about Jonnu Smith as a guy who's like, yes, he plays tight end, but we think of him as more of like athlete, like playmaker. Like he's one of built from like cut from that cloth, built out of that kind of a mold. And Aronde Gadsden being a former college wide receiver converted to tight end, like I kind of see sort of at least very loose archetypal similarities between those two. And I would be encouraged by that at a very minimum. But then, yeah, looking at just the price and where the market has him valued, Aronde Gadsden comes in as the tight end 11, somewhere around a 2027 mid-second round pick and a little bit lower than a 2027 early second round pick. So we're not even talking firsts, man. We're not even talking firsts. And I think that is the thing that I agree. I think people should be buying. I don't know that I would rank him a ton higher than this, but some of those other names and some of these other assets that are around him, like at least Gadsden has something intriguing. And we love, at least in theory, the offense that he belongs to if it's fully healthy. So yeah, there's a little bit of something there. I think people need to seriously consider more, seeing if there is more juice to squeeze, proverbially speaking. But I don't know, unless we want to have some conversations about Gunnar Helm or Terrence Ferguson, we should probably get into our final topic. But listeners, if you want to read about some of those names, again, there's an article. I left the link in the description. There is more on those 2025 guys. But we do have to round out with our, I guess, we're turning this into an annual thing. Because I understand this conversation is going to be going on for a long time. And if we're talking about dynasty tight end, like, 3 through 5, and then all these other dudes, we may as well talk about the top two, Bowers and McBride. Whichever one you prefer, I don't know. There's a decent case for and against either of them. Tyler, when you look at the two of these guys, where do you stand? Because I think they both obviously have tremendous upside, and they both have unique but very different challenges.
Yeah. So first things first, I mean, they're going in the similar range. You're going to be getting Brock Bowers, you know, in the second round, middle of the second round. Typically McBride's at the end of the second, maybe that 2-3 turn. So the price is about the same. You know, I had McBride in front of Bowers for the longest time. I just ran my latest rounds of projections and ended up putting Bowers ahead of McBride. And I really don't think you could go wrong, but at the end of the day, like, you might be sitting there and have to make the choice, right? So you got to have some opinions, and you got to have the ranks, and you got to stand pat. So, you know, for the longest time, I think what really changed it for me was, I think, one, looking at the Cardinals, and I think one of the mistakes I was making was assuming that they would be as pass heavy as they were last year when building out my projections for this year, right? You want to use historical data, team data, to make determinations on, you know, who's, you know, how's this offense going to run? Like, what's the splits going to be for their pass run ratio? If they score X amount of touchdowns, how many of those are through the air? How many of those are through the ground? And if you just kind of look at it from like last year's lens, like, it's easy to just project it to be super pass heavy again. Like, they're going to suck. But like, when I really started to kind of look at it from more of like, maybe regressing to the mean, where like, I don't think they're going to pass as much because that was just kind of unsustainable. And then you also look at like Trey McBride's touchdown rate over time. Like, he hasn't been a touchdown scorer. And he did score some touchdowns last year, and he didn't score a crazy amount that he can't do it again. But as I just kind of put the pieces together, and then looking at Brock Bowers healthy, and then looking like, hey, like, the Raiders really didn't add anybody to the pass catching core. A lot of this is going to hinge on Mendoza being like a serviceable quarterback, which I definitely think he will be. But in the end of the day, the projections ended up favoring Bowers a bit, and I bumped him ahead. I just think he's that kind of dominant player. McBride last year didn't really have to contend with, you know, if Marv is healthy and Michael Wilson's healthy, there's more to contend with through the air. If they decide to run the ball a little bit more with their number three overall pick, Jeremiah Love, like, what does the quarterback situation look like? We really don't know, because, I mean, Jacoby Brissett, is he holding out or not showing up or something? And then it's like, maybe it's Gardner Minshew, but they go to Carson Beck. I think there's just too many, like, when we're splitting hairs and talking about a 1A, 1B, those like little minutia matter to me. And you got to kind of take those into, you know, your process. And, well, I'm not going to, you know, put my thumb down and say boo anybody who puts McBride over Bowers. I get the argument. I think at this moment of recording, I'm firmly Bowers over McBride. And I could see myself staying in that lane as we approach the season term.
It's certainly fair, you know, and I had written about both of these guys for one of the fantasy face-offs that I did. Now, that's a series that I do on the site that's, you know, more for redraft purposes, but like, obviously it does encapsulate a lot of, you know, looking at player track records and stuff. So like, there is a clear, you know, dynasty tie-in as well. Like, I'm still setting expectations for how I think they're going to do for fantasy, whether regardless of the format. And, you know, to your point that you had made earlier, when Jacoby Brissett had come under center from week six on last year, they threw the ball 41.6 times per game and ranked second behind only the Rams with 309.2 air yards per game. Their offensive line got decimated. Their running back room got decimated. I don't think they're going to want to do that anymore, but like, it's weird though. The weird thing for me is that the only offense that threw the ball more than them featured an offensive coordinator, Mike LaFleur, who is now the guy that the Cardinals hired to be their new head coach. So like, it's such a difficult conversation for me to kind of even think about. But like, even in that article, like, I had picked, you know, McBride over Bowers for various reasons. If you want to see the whole thing is on ftnfantasy.com. I recommend it. But as we're talking about, like, I still really like Bowers. I really do. I guess for me, the big thing, and how concerned are you about seeing Kirk Cousins? I guess that's kind of the big thing. Cause like,
I'm not. I mean, I think it's all smoke, man. I think we see Mendoza. If you had to give me like an over under, like, I would say we see Mendoza at least like 14 and a half games, at least. Like, I'd feel really good about that. I think it's more so like they're making Mendoza earn it, right? I can't see a world when you start Kirk Cousins there, so I'm not worried about it, man.
I guess that makes sense, you know. But to put sort of a tidy bow on it before we get out of here, to, you know, kind of obviously these guys are the top two tight ends. We talked about the other guys who comprise the top five tight ends in Dynasty, according to Keep Trade Cut, and, you know, basically everybody's rankings. In some order, it's going to be the names that we discussed on this podcast today. When you look at Bowers and McBride, would you consider tearing down off of them to maybe go get like a Loveland or a Warren or something? And what sort of compensation would you need kind of added to that to balance that out? Because I think that this is something that managers could theoretically do because we are in such a rich dynasty landscape for tight end. But is it worth it? I guess kind of is the core issue.
I mean, I'm not moving off these guys, dude. It's like you can pry these dudes from my cold, dead hands, man. I'm not moving McBride or Bowers if I got them. This is like three first territory, like Gibbs, Gibbs, Jamar Chase, kind of. Those are the conversations we're having. Mm-hmm. I think Josh Allen, even at this point in time, he's getting a little older. But it's just like there's very few players where I'm like, you're going to have to give me three firsts in order for me to move off them, and these are those. I'm not tearing down. As much as I, you know, talked about how much I love Colson Loveland, like, I just, there's something to me that's always going to be like, I've seen it, and I know it's real. And, like, I've seen that with Loveland, right? And I know it's real. But these guys are just a different level. Like, it's their own tier. Like, Loveland right now sits at the top of a second tier in the tight ends. And I think I said at the top, like, after the season, it could very well be sitting in that top tier at the end of this season. But right now, like, it is a tier of their own with McBride and Bowers. And I would not be trying to tear down. I'm holding on to those pieces, as those are game changers on a week-to-week basis, players that can absolutely win you weeks. And at the tight end position, that's a tough thing to find.
Oh, very true. And, you know, listeners, I think we got some valuable context for the tight end market in Dynasty in this episode. I'm glad we had this conversation and all of the other conversations we had about these different position groups. Looking back at the 2025 rookies, I would encourage everybody, if you did not listen to our discussion on some key wide receiver names or what we talked about with the running backs or the quarterbacks, go back, listen to some of those. Definitely worth your time, always worth your time to spend some time with the Crossing Routes podcast. We will be back next week to talk about something related to fantasy football that is not going to be the exact same topic as this week, because that is how podcasts work. But until that time occurs, we are going to be signing off. Go over to FTNFantasy.com, read all the things that we do. I am Herms. He is Tyler. We are saying goodbye. Adios.
Think about how far we come just to say goodbye. And staying up and sleeping late.